Delux versus Sequoia. Good morning. You're not locked into 7 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Michael Sakaris and I represent Sukhoi Civil Aircraft Company, known as SCAC or SEAC. Your Honor, my client has entered a special and limited appearance to challenge service of process and personal jurisdiction. Nonetheless, I would like to lay out very briefly the background of the dispute in which the service issues arose.
We understand it's a handshake lease and that sort of thing, but let me ask a couple of questions about that. Is there any challenge, setting the Hague Convention aside, that Sukhoi was properly served under Russian law? Because I didn't see that.
Under the Hague Service Convention, there would have to be a determination.
No, I'm saying setting Hague aside, looking at Russian law, is there any challenge whether or not Sukhoi was served properly?
That's correct. The Russian courts have determined that for purposes of service of an American case, the Hague Service Convention is the exclusive means. That issue was not raised here.
It's Russian courts. Is there any U.S. authority on it?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And then next, if Russia's decided not to abide by Hague, why would we insist on Hague?
It is a decision made by the U.S. Department of State. Under federal statute, there is a list or compilation, as it is called in the statute, of treaties in force between the U.S. and other countries. There is this compilation is established by law so as to avoid any evidentiary issue as to which of the treaties in force. Notwithstanding a dispute between the U.S. and Russia as to how the mechanics of the convention is supposed to work, the U.S. position is that the treaty remains a treaty in force with the Russian Federation. We have cited the compilation and pointed to the website for the Secretary of State of the United States where that is listed. That compilation was in effect as of January 1, 2013. The attempted service was in 2012, the default judgment in 2012. So the treaty was in force at that time. The U.S. has taken that position, and in addition to that, we have cited Supreme Court authority holding that just because another state does not comply with a treaty, it does not mean that the treaty ceases to be applicable law in the United States. The specific context was a request for extradition from Italy back in the early 1900s, in which Italy was refusing to extradite Italians to the U.S. The U.S. Supreme Court reviewed the law and held that the United States courts will abide by treaties, even if foreign countries do not, because they remain the law of the land. So I believe that that is fundamentally the position in this case. Now, once Delux decided to file a lawsuit in 2012, on what I might add was a handshake lease, as Your Honor referred to it, but really an offer of a lease in the form of a letter going back to 2008, it then proceeded to serve by means, or attempt to serve by means of a process server, a private process server in Russia. The first thing that my client did was to consult U.S. counsel. My client is a responsible company. I've been representing this client for more than 10 years. It has American and European aircraft partners. I deal with Boeing and other companies on behalf of SCAC. And looking at the case law, the first thing that we saw was the broad decision by the Washington State Supreme Court. Now, in that case, the court followed a bright-line rule holding that the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution preempts any other means of service besides the Hague Service Convention where it applies. It's important to point out that the Washington Supreme Court did that in order to do equity, in order to be fair, because what it was considering was what is the impact of this on statutes of limitations under Washington state law. And it found that because the hands are tied of the state courts, because the state courts lose control over service abroad where the convention applies, as a result, in equity, statutes of limitations should be told from the moment that a plaintiff in Washington initiates service through the Hague Service Convention. So we looked at that. We looked at the fact that that in turn relies on the Volkswagen Work case by the federal Supreme Court, and we looked at the entirety of the case, and SCAC decided this is not valid service. Not only is there no attempt to go through the Russian Central Authority, but also there were no translations of the complaint and of the summons, as the convention would require. That is shown by the absence of any reference to translations in the proof of service. So in that context, SCAC decided that this was invalid service, that by the rules it had the right not to acknowledge the service and to wait for proper service. And notwithstanding that the lease dispute was over a lease for $12,000 a month, this led to a default judgment for $285,000, which is what the Superior Court ultimately entered. There is a supersedious bond in place for $475,000 at this stage. So really what we are looking at is a case that was never seen on the merits, would lead to a windfall to a party that did not comply with Washington or federal law in the manner of service, and a foreign company that acted responsibly in looking at the cases and the law and following the rules and relying on them. Now, as far as whether the service convention should apply, we believe that the analysis is very straightforward. First of all, it's a treaty in force, as I indicated earlier. Second, this is a civil or commercial case, which is the second prong. And in addition to that, the case gives occasion for service abroad. That occasion is simply that is what Delex did to
but
serve abroad.
If Delex had followed the Hague Convention, it would never have been served.
But that would not have been necessary, because as we point out under Article 15 of the Convention, even if it were futile to request that the Russian Ministry of Justice serve, nonetheless, you could still wait 6 months and then move for default. In other words, the convention itself has a jurisdictional safety valve. That safety valve operates even if there is no showing of compliance with Russian law, even if there is no showing of actual delivery of service or by other means under the convention, and even if you don't get a certificate of service back from the Russian Central Authority. So it could not have been futile to comply with the convention. They simply did not and preferred to take a default.
Good morning. I'm Steve Block, Foster Pepper for Delex respondent. I don't think I'll be long.
Let me ask you right off the bat. Doesn't this put a state appellate court in the position of interpreting or contravening a treaty between two sovereign governments?
No, it doesn't. It puts a state court in a position of having to follow what federal courts have uniformly determined, subject to general principles under the Supremacy Clause, Marbury versus Madison.
But the federal courts aren't all uniform, are they?
They are. There's not one case cited in the briefing that stands for the proposition that a plaintiff would have to go through the futile process of serving under the convention when we know the country has refused to comply with it in order to have effective service. It's not, if there were, we might have something to debate, but the federal judiciary is completely uniform on that. Not only can this court make that determination, it must follow the federal courts.
What about the argument that even if Russia wasn't going to serve them, that you just wait 6 months and then take your default per the convention?
The federal courts don't require that. I mean, there's the federal judiciary and its pronouncements on this was very succinctly summarized by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Nuance Communications v. Abbey Software House. And it's in my briefing. It cites probably half a dozen other circuits, including the Ninth, and it says, while appellees argue that service must have been attempted under the Hague Convention before alternative service methods can be employed, this court disagrees. Rule 4 was not intended to burden plaintiffs with the Sisyphean task of attempting service through the Hague Convention procedures when a member state has categorically refused to effect service. It could not
federal
be clear.
Rule 4 then has a further protection for the foreign company. It requires the plaintiff or the claimant to then get permission to serve them,
yes,
which is not present in the state rule. So is that a way to distinguish these cases?
It is not. There's nothing in these cases that says that that would be a condition. It says that, actually, one or two of them, not all of them, one or two of them, they mentioned that the plaintiff did comply with that. There is a provision in Federal Civil Procedure 4.1, that requires that. There's not in ours. That's not to say that because we don't have a requirement like that we're no longer required or able to follow federal judicial law.
You said, I think, that we're bound by the federal court decisions, but that's not exactly true, is it? I mean, we would be bound if there was a United States Supreme Court decision, but isn't it stated in broad that they are persuasive rather than binding?
I don't believe that's the case. The law is that the federal judiciary has the exclusive dominion to interpret the treaties of the United States. It doesn't say the Supreme Court. It's true the Supreme Court could come in and change what's there, but absent any authority from the federal judiciary to the contrary, when you've got half a dozen cases or more that all say the same thing, I don't think that relieves the state from the general concept that it is bound by the federal judiciary's determinations regarding treaty interpretation.
How would we deal with a situation? Let's say there was a division in the federal cases on this. Some said okay, some said no. How would we as a state court sort that out?
I believe you would hear us arguing why one side's interpretation under the circumstances of the case that was addressed should control over another. But here it's just categorically addressed. We don't need to go through this process in Russia. Here's why, and here's what will be effective service.
How does this interact with the state statutes of limitations? Is it true, as counsel said, that if you did attempt service under the Hague Convention, that the statute of limitation – oh, I'm sorry – would be told – would the statute of limitations be told once you attempted service under the Hague Convention?
I'm not prepared to address that, Your Honor. I don't think it's relevant.
Was there any kind of statute of limitations problem or urgency in this matter?
Not at the time original service was effected.
Okay.
No. There probably would be an argument if this court reversed as to whether we could serve now, but that's not. I don't view that as being before the court at this time. All right. The federal judiciary is completely uniform. One state court, a persuasive, influential state court, New York, where much international trade is affected, has completely ruled in accordance with the federal judiciary and logic that you shouldn't be required to go through a futile process in order to have service of process effected. Now, I believe I've covered much of what I had to point out. The position that Sukhoi was taking is that, well, the Department of State has pronounced that we are subject to the convention. That's true. In fact, the federal judiciary as well. We don't dispute that. But it doesn't end with the language of the treaty. It ends with the interpretation of the treaty by the federal judiciary based on the circumstances. I mean, it stands to reason that a federal court could rule that if a foreign country that's also a party to the convention refuses to abide by it, then we have the right to do X, which is exactly what's going on here. Article 15 also speaks to how a default judgment can be taken. And it says that judgment shall not be given unless one of two circumstances is the case. One is that the document, the complaint, was served by a method prescribed by the internal law of the state, addressed for the service of documents and domestic actions upon persons who are within its territory, which Sukhoi is saying is improper and not allowed. Or two, the document was actually delivered to the defendant or to his residence by another method provided for by this convention, which we all know Russia will not allow. So under the argument that Sukhoi is making, we could never have a judgment taken against a Russian entity under the convention. All right. Sukhoi raises the fact, suggests that there's...
You mean you could never have a default judgment entered, or you could have no judgment of any kind?
Well, it says judgment shall not be taken. I suppose it would be a default judgment, but and that's the way it reads, Article 15. So Sukhoi mentions that there's a dispute as to whether there was ever actual enforceable lease. I believe that probably is irrelevant here, but if that was an argument to be heard, then Sequoia would have to satisfy the White v. Home factors, and that would address the first factor in order in having a default judgment vacated, which is that substantial evidence supports a prima facie defense. But it disregards the following three factors, the mistake, inadvertent surprise, or excusable neglect. We haven't heard anything about that. Moving party acted with due diligence to have it set aside. We waited 2.5 years before anything happened here, and there's no substantial hardship would result to the opposing party. There certainly would be. The likelihood we might have an opportunity to enforce this judgment would disappear. Lastly, what Sequoia has done here is upset the enforcement, delayed by over a year, the enforcement of a judgment, a court order, trial court order directing payment of a sum of money. We believe improperly. And on that basis, it would be appropriate for the court to award Sequoia fees for having to go through trial court proceedings, Court of Appeal Commissioner proceedings, this appeal, waiting a year. It's true that interest is accruing, but there's a lot of fees that have been paid in getting this judgment satisfied.
And is there any appellate decision that you're relying on there? Most of that, like the authority, it struck me, was like dissolving a wrongfully issued restraining order in the trial court itself, whereas versus on appeal now.
I don't recall whether the authority I cited in my brief is Court of Appeals or trial court level, to be honest with you. I don't believe it actually speaks to a situation like this, but it does speak to a circumstance where a trial court order was thwarted improperly. On these basis, Your Honors, we respectfully request that the rulings below be affirmed with an award of two delicts of fees. Thank you.
Your Honors, I would like to respond very briefly to counsel for Delex. Counsel relies heavily on federal court decisions, saying that we must follow the federal courts. First of all, these are federal district courts. But even so, actually, the federal court procedure is perfectly fine and was available to Delex. In other words, Delex could have sued in federal court invoking diversity jurisdiction. But even if Delex decided to sue in state court anyway, the federal procedure in those courts is not what Delex did in this case. In other words, there are federal cases at the district court level where a plaintiff may file a motion arguing the futility of seeking service of process through the central authority of the Russian Federation and obtain an order for alternative means of service after being heard out on those facts and a record has been created. Delex did not do that. So despite being champions for federal procedure, it is not a procedure that they followed or attempted to follow in the state court here.
Were those procedures all followed in the cases that Sequoia is relying on? I guess the basis of my question is that, you know, there does seem to be quite a bit of federal court authority. Maybe it is the district courts, but that was available to your client as well as to Delex, right? And so, I mean, you're saying, well, you read the law, and it seemed to you you didn't have to respond until they went through the Hague process. But what didn't all those decisions give you pause in coming to that conclusion?
Your Honor, if they had moved for an order providing for alternative service in the district court following the federal procedure, and the court had looked at the Hague Service Convention, then yes.
So that's what my question is. In those cases cited, these federal district court cases that say it's all right not to use the Hague Convention, were those all cases in which first the plaintiff got an order from the court?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
All of them.
That's correct. In addition, Your Honor, there are cases that we have cited in our briefs that are federal cases specifically holding that it is not futile to go through the Hague Service Convention, because under Article 15 there is what the federal courts call a jurisdictional safety valve, which is as, for example, held in the NRA South Africa apartheid litigation. A default judgment was entered, and it was upheld on the grounds that although the South African Central Authority had not returned a certificate of service, nonetheless 6 months had passed, and under the Hague Service Convention, you could enter a default judgment at that point. So the federal courts point out exactly what Alex could have done but chose not to do. First, in failing to seek an order up front from the Superior Court on alternative means of service. Second, having waited 6 months and not receiving a certificate of service, then moving for default judgment. And, of course, a supremacy clause binds the state courts and does not bind the federal courts.
Thank you.